Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, Text 32, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yada ete asangataha bhavaha bhuta indriya manaha gunaha yada ayatana nirmane na shikuhu brahma vit tama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manogunaha yada yatana nirmane na shikur brahma vittama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manogunaha yada yatana nirmane na shikur brahma vittama brahma vittama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manoguna yada yatana nirmane na shikur brahma vittama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manogunaha yada yatana nirmane na shikur brahma vittama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manoguna yadayatana nirmane na shekur brahma vittama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manogunaha yadayatana nirmane Asheko Brahma Vittama. Ladies, please. Yadaite Sangata Bhava Bhumendriya Manogunaha Yadayata Nirmane Asheko Brahma Vittama. Yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manogunaha yada yatana nirmane na shekur brahma vittama yadaite sangata bhava bhutendriya manogunaha yada yatana nirmane shekho brahma vittama yada as long as ete all these asangataha, without being assembled, bhavaha, remained so situated, bhuta, elements, indriya, senses, manaha, mind, punaha, modes of nature, yada, so long, ayatana, the body, nirmane, in being formed, na, shekuhu, was not possible, brahma, vit, tama, O Narada, the best knower of transcendental knowledge. Translation. O Narada, best of the transcendentalists, the forms of the body cannot take place as long as these created parts, namely the elements, senses, mind, and modes of nature, are not assembled. Purport. The different types of bodily construction of the living entities are exactly like different types of motor cars manufactured by assembling the allied motor parts. When the car is ready, the driver sits in the car and moves it as he desires. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The living entity is as if seated on the machine of the body, and the car of the body is moving by the control of material nature, just as the railway trains are moving under the direction of the controller. The living entities, however, are not the bodies. They are separate from the cars of the body. But the less intelligent material scientist cannot understand the process of assembling the parts of the body, namely the senses, the mind, and the qualities of the material modes. Every living entity is a spiritual spark, part and parcel of the Supreme Being, and by the kindness of the Lord, for the Father is kind to his sons, the individual living beings are given a little freedom to act according to their will, to lord it over the material nature. Just as a father gives some playthings to the crying child to satisfy him, the whole material creation is made possible by the will of the Lord to allow the bewildered living entities to lord it over things as they desire, although under the control of the agent of the Lord. The living entities are exactly like small children playing the material field under the control of the maidservant of the Lord, nature. They accept the Maya or the maidservant as all in all, and thus wrongly conceive the Supreme Truth to be feminine, Goddess Durga, etc. The foolish childlike materialists cannot reach beyond the conception of the maidservant, material nature, but the intelligent grown-up sons of the Lord know well that all the acts of material nature are controlled by the Lord. Just as a maidservant is under the control of the master, the father of the undeveloped children. The parts of the body, such as the senses, are the creation of the Mahatattva, and when they are assembled by the will of the Lord, the material body comes into existence, and the living entity is allowed to use it for further activities. This is explained as follows. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrestam Manamapi Shachiputram Atra Sarupam Rupam Tas Yagajamur Puring Maturin Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tamdat Asmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavansha Shri Rupam Sarvajatam sahagana raghunathan vitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam krishna taitanya devam shri radha krishna pada sahagana lalita shri vishakhan vitam sha guru vaishnav bhagavan tine smarane hoy vigna vinashan anayase hoy nijavanchita puran Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This verse continues with a similar theme to the previous verse. In the previous verse, it was discussed how the senses come into being via the mode of passion, and the living beings acquire different kinds of bodies in order to try to enjoy this material world. Yesterday, I spoke about how it's surprising how anyone's taking, or anyone's even interested in spiritual life in this age when people are so messed up, and I gave some examples. One thing I forgot to say is that the food we eat is also full of poison. So that also messes up the brain and the thinking function. And another thing, I was talking yesterday evening about living in pigeonholes, as Srila Prabhupada put it. This whole so-called civilization, it's so unnatural. It's not natural for people to live perched in midair, something like a bird, crammed together with so many people in a huge city and whizzing around in cars or buses, no contact with nature. No fresh air. In some cities, well, in Delhi in the winter, you hardly ever see the sun because there's so much smog and haze. And in some cities, you wouldn't see the sun because the buildings are so high. Maybe. Really? The buildings are so heavy. If you're in downtown Manhattan in New York City, then you might see the sun just when it's at the zenith. Otherwise, you won't see. And then you wouldn't be looking anyway because there's so many other distractions. A very horrible life that people are living. But then I thought also that one reason why people are still coming for spiritual life is because there's no love in the material world. That's a basic principle of Vedanta understanding. But it's particularly true at the present time. There's hardly even a semblance of it. Who can you trust? Increasingly, parents, well, if they become parents, they don't even want to have children. But if they have children, they see the children as an investment in their future. Everyone is exploiting everyone else, and the parents are also, they see the children as some entity who I have to raise so they'll bring in money so I can live comfortably, so-called comfortably, in my pigeonhole. And then the children are under such pressure from the beginning of life to succeed. Succeed means you join. To be a success means you become a major exploiter. Everyone's exploiter. Doctor means, as soon as they look at someone, they're not looking at, first, they don't look at the symptoms of the disease or the injury. They look how much money we can squeeze out of these people. Lawyers also. They don't care. Some poor person, they have no money. They'll recommend an operation to them, which they don't need. So they have to take a loan And then they spend the rest of their life in debt, and then they send their children, and they want their children to earn money. And yeah, lawyers also, the first thing they look at is how much money we can squeeze out of you. The cheaters and the cheated, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we could change that to the exploiters and the exploited. And you're called a success if you're successful in exploiting others. There's no love. In the religious field also, it's mostly all exploitation. Today there's initiation ceremony, and I'm supposed to be a transparent via medium for the mission of the parampara. But we find so many gurus, they're just cheating others. They take their sentiment, and they have nothing spiritual to give. And many of them, they can talk in a... they're quite intelligent materially, and they can talk in a way which sounds... I don't know exactly, because I don't listen to them, but I'm told that some of them, they're very good, and they're very arrogant. I'm thinking of one in particular. He's arrogant, and then they smile, they have a beard, and people just believe them. They're so stupid. Stupidity is... what is there? Symptoms of material life is cheaters and the cheated, full of misery, and stupidity is the principle of material life. We call it ignorance or ajnana. Put it in other words, just stupidity. And even the most materially intelligent people, they're often very stupid. Well, they are definitely stupid, because they're pursuing an aim of life which neither makes them or anyone else happy at the present time. But just everyone's brainwashing each other that you have to have lots of money and a good career and then you'll be happy. And no one's happy. And if you just open your eyes for a second, you'll see no one's happy. But you must be happy. You've got a big house and you've got a big car and you've got plenty of money, and you must be happy. Look at all the big people. Are they happy? Happy? Who's happy? Everyone's on drugs nowadays, right? Bollywood means drugs. And we see that in the American politicians, I know about the ones in India, they're all on drugs. Seems like that. They may be prescription drugs or non-prescription drugs. The whole world's a complete mess, if you hadn't noticed. Many people don't notice, or if they notice, they think, well, we'll just have to make some little adjustment. Let's vote in a different party, right? That's another stupidity. They actually believe the politicians say, we'll come, we'll do this, we'll do that. And you know the politicians, they're just liars. They won't do what they say they'll do, or even if they try to do what they say they'll do, they can't do it. And still people believe in it, and they vote, and they think it's a very important thing that they vote. Choose your cheater. Who's going to cheat you the best way? Or who's going to help you? And helping someone in material existence means pushing someone else down. Just like in this country, there's equal rights, right? It's a democracy, equal rights. It's not equal rights. No, if you're a male, you have less rights than females. If you're a Brahmin by caste, you have less rights than non-Brahmins, and so on. If you're a Hindu, you have less rights than non-Hindus. You put money in the hundi and the government takes it and opens fish farms. That's in Andhra Pradesh, not in Telangana. I don't know if they're still making fish fry. Anyway, the whole thing, it stinks top to bottom, inside out, back to front. And people are still going on and thinking, oh yeah, wonderful. Actually, there's a whole generation of young people in the West who just feel more or less hopeless. They don't want to have children because they think it's a crime to have children. Why bring children into this world? Some of them think of suing their parents for making them come into the world. If they can find their parents, they may have... It's a few years ago, someone in America told me, he was an aspiring devotee, young man, said, as if it was the most normal thing in the world, California, where else, that I was raised by two lesbians who are drug addicts. And that's normal. No father, no idea who his father was. So it's a terrible mess. And you may say, well, there can't be any God. God wouldn't have created this. You created it yourself. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchyate. Because we have the motive to enjoy this world, we create a situation, and Bhagavan facilitates it. This whole chapter is about how the living beings, the mechanics of how living beings come into this world. Of course, it has to be accepted. We can't make any experiments, scientific experiments. That's another nonsense. The scientists, they don't recognize their limits, and they make all kinds of speculations about multiverses and multiple dimensions. With no way they can prove it. It's just all imagination. They should recognize their limits. Well, however, whatever field of you're studying, there's a limit, and you can't go further. How did it all begin? There must have been a big bang, they tell us. Maybe if we come back in 100 years, and if there's still anything resembling civilization left, and there's still anything like those horrible colleges left, then they'll laugh. Oh, 100 years ago, people really believed there was a big bang. Ha, 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 ha. They'll have another theory, which is science, which is also wrong. At some point, we have to understand that what are the limits of our ability to understand anything? Then we have to come to Shastra. People say, why do you believe in Shastra? Just some books. It's not just some books. This is the message of the Absolute Truth. You say, well, how can you prove it? Actually, if you want to take a scientific method, you can't prove it. Actually, if you want to take the scientific method, you can't prove anything. You know that? Can you think of anything you can prove scientifically? You're a saint. You know about these things. What can you prove scientifically? Tell me. What can you prove scientifically? I'll show that you can't prove it scientifically. Whatever it is. Okay, how about 2 + 2 = 4? You don't even have to prove it. It's obvious, right? What do you mean by 2? Any answers? Huh? It's a number. Okay, here we have one pen. This is an unusual looking pen, but I assure you it's a pen. Can I prove it? You can't even start to discuss anything without accepting axiom. And if you say, this is a pen, okay, there's one pen. Where does it begin and where does it end? If you get down to the microscopic level, you can't fix a point where it begins. And what is a point anyway? There's no such thing as a point. Measurement, science means measurement, right? So you measure from point to point, but there's no such thing as a point. Because as soon as you say this point is here, it's not a point, because it has length and breadth, then it's not a point. So a point is only imaginary. How about that? You ever think about that? They ever teach you that at school? If you want to argue, you can't go anywhere. In science, you have to accept so many things as axiomatic. They presume that the laws of nature which we have discovered are universally applicable in all times, places, and circumstances. They just presume. You can't prove it. You don't know. There may be some galaxy far away where there are different laws of nature altogether. You don't know where if there's any water, the boiling point of water. Anyway, what's the boiling point of water? 100 degrees Celsius. You sure about that? Did you ever try it? Try 20 times, see if you get 100. Exactly. Well, it has to be exactly distilled, and it has to be under the right pressure. Constants. That's universal constants. The problem with universal constants is that they're not constant many times. And there's actually an institute in London, that great center of learning, which regularly modifies the constants. Anyway, what I'm getting to here is that ultimately we have to accept we don't know, and if we are going to know, then we have to accept knowledge from above the plane of our own sensual perception and our own ability to articulate thoughts in our mind. Why are we even interested to know? Why are humans interested to know anything? Why do people study history? Well, in India they don't, but it doesn't bring any money, right? So no one bothers studying history. No point in studying history. But why do people, where does this urge come from to study and know? And why do we think someone's better than someone else if they're more intelligent? Where does that come from? What does it matter if someone's more intelligent? Someone may be less intelligent, but they get food and clothing and shelter. What does it matter? Who's intelligent and who's not intelligent? Where does this urge come from to know? Mr. Bunch of Chemicals. You're just a bunch of chemicals, right? That's what they teach you at school. Where does the urge to know come from? Does it come from the hydrogen or the oxygen or the nitrogen or the carbon? Or when you combine them together, the urge to... Where does it come from? Comes from the soul. How are you going to know about the soul? Can't measure it. Says that right there in Bhagavad Gita. You can't measure it. You can't touch it, taste it, smell it, feel it. That's what's said indirectly by it. Achedyo yam madahyo yam, etc. It's not subject to material laws. The desire to know. Where does the desire come from to stay alive? Who wants to be shot in the head right now? Anyone? Does anyone want to be shot in the head at any point of time? Some people they do. They even shoot themselves in the head. Not recommended. Why do we want to live? Why does even, if you see an ant and it's crawling, you put your finger in front, it'll run away very, very afraid. There's a story in Mahabharata like that, right? There's a worm crawling on the floor, on the road, and some chariot is coming, and the worm crawls away, and someone is laughing at the worm. Why do you bother to maintain your body as a worm? And then the worm started speaking to him, because actually he was a rishi in a previous life who did something, he ended up as a worm. Why Why won't stay alive? Why? This doesn't want to stay alive. It's not alive. If you break this, no protest. Why not? It's chemicals. This is chemicals. The desire to live and the very phenomenon of life and the desire to know and the desire to be happy, they don't come from chemicals. They come from something else. That's what we call the soul. Sat Chit Ananda. The desire to exist and not die. The desire to know. Chit. And the desire to be happy. What would make you happy? It's meaningless. It's ridiculous to ask a pen what would make you happy. You can say it's a combination of chemicals, but if you ask a dead body what would make you happy, it's ridiculous also, because it's just chemicals. And this body, now it's just chemicals. So what's the difference between a living body and a dead body? It's a simple thing to understand. But then to get knowledge of the soul, we have to go beyond the platform of trying to understand it from the material platform. Trying to understand everything according to our own sensory and noetic abilities. Noetic refers to activities of the intelligent. That is called maya. You know that maya means that which is not. Another meaning is mapiyatiti maya. Map karna, to want to measure everything. That is called maya. And the whole materialistic civilization is running on the idea. One ancient Greek philosopher, they call them ancient, not so ancient by Indian standards, by Western so-called civilization standards. I don't know the name, maybe you know the name. He said, man is the measure of all things. You can look it up if you like. Someone with one of those complex Greek names, some Parmenides or something like that. Man is the measure of all things. Wrong. God is the measure of all things. The idea that we are here to sort everything out, to measure it, put it in its place, reconstruct it. It's a mess. The whole society is a mess. And the more it becomes atheistic, the more of a mess it becomes. Or even religious systems which are based on ignorance, they also just create a big mess. Religious systems based on ignorance of the fact of reincarnation, they become exploitive also. Instead of seeing that everyone is at a certain stage in their development, you think that if they're not part of our religion, they should be killed. And then within the religion, there are different opinions, and then they kill each other within the same religion. So knowledge is required. Here in India, I feel more than in other countries, knowledge is very much prized. But it used to be Vedic knowledge. Someone, Pandit, what is that? Charnakya says, Pandit Sarvatra Pujyate. Someone who is Pandit, who's landed in Vedic knowledge, is respected everywhere. But that's changed now. If you have MSc, PhD in some materialistic subject, that's considered very prestigious. So the same trend is going on, but it's become misplaced. One interesting point which relevant to this purport is that Srila Prabhupada often used the analogy of the body being like a car and the soul is like the driver. Actually, that's from the Upanishads. You'll also find in Srimad Bhagavatam, given it said the chariot, that's all. But this analogy might not click with people in a few years' time if we have all self-driving cars. So some things, many analogies we find in Vedic literature or in traditional Vedic culture, they don't appeal to people, or it doesn't click with them as it used to. Just like the frog in the well, no one has a well anymore. Or if it's the well as it used to be in the village, there'd be an open well. You have some bore well, but you can't see it. And there might be frogs in there. But the analogy of the frog in the well doesn't fit. There are so many analogies. Another one, the duck is... What is that? The dog is chasing going behind the bull, the testicles, thinking it's eggs to eat. But you don't see bulls. There are so many. The analogy of the grandfather's well, that someone, he insisted, our family well, we must use the water from this well, even though it's become brackish and stagnant, we have to use it because it's our family tradition only to use this well. But it's the water is poisonous now. So if you drink that water, then if gradually all the members of his family died. But he insisted, we must stick to our family tradition. But then again, who has a well to even understand this? So many of the analogies, they are becoming outdated. We have to make new ones. Srila Prabhupada also, he made new ones. Just like you can take instruction how to fly a plane, but ultimately you have to fly your own plane. Now we have self-flying planes also. So we have to update our analogies. If you see, Krishna will give the intelligence how to think of different analogies. Analogies are helpful for people to understand. We find Jesus in the Bible. He spoke what are called parables. They tell stories to bring out a point. Mostly about moral principles. Not much in the line of logic or understanding God, but moral principles. One he gave about the value of human life and taking our opportunities. So it can be understood in different ways. Anyway, I won't tell. It's too long to tell, and it's not that important anyway, because we have the same thing in Vedic culture. The point that we should utilize human life for God realization. We should not waste the chance. We have so many analogies in Vedic culture. Even the words Prabhupada uses, part and parcel of the Supreme Being. That's, what is that? Part and parcel means angsha. Mamaiva angsho jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatanaha. Prabhupada writes, every living entity is a spiritual spark, part and parcel of the Supreme Being. And by the kindness of the Lord, for the Father is kind to his sons, the individual living beings are given a little freedom to act according to their will, to lord it over the material nature. It's a commonly asked question. I was asked it yesterday, and I've been asked so many times. How is it that if we are in the spiritual world, we're here now? Why did we leave? There's the answer. We are given freedom to act according to our will. Not only are we given freedom, but God gives a whole big playground called the material world in which we can indulge in our desires. The only thing is that we come to this material world, Krishna Bahyamukh Hoya Bhogavanchakar, being inimical to Krishna. Krishna Bahyamukh Hoya, becoming inimical to Krishna, Bhogavanchakare. We desire material enjoyment because we are by nature desirous beings. Consciousness means desire. It's a concomitant factor with consciousness. So, when we forget Krishna, or when we turn away from Krishna, our desires to utilize everything for the service of Krishna become transformed into desires to enjoy independently, separately from Krishna. And that is the cause of all our suffering. And because we're all trying to exploit the results of material nature, then we mistreat others, and then we have to take karmic reactions. We come into this material world, Krishna Bahimokhaya Bhogavanchakari. That means dvesh and icha. Icha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani sammoham sarga yanti parantava. More explicitly, it's given Krishna Bahimokhaya Bhogavanchakari nikatasta mayatari japati adhari. When we turn away from Krishna, we desire material enjoyment, and then Maya catches us, and then we become in Maya, in illusion. So it's very difficult to understand how we could leave that situation. But then on the other hand, if we say that, well, we were just here since time immemorial, there's no beginning whatsoever, and that means that God puts us here to suffer. And that means our jivaya swarup, our swarup is not Krishna Das, it's being in the material world. So some things in the spiritual realm also are inconceivable. We'll never be able to fully understand them. The logic has its limits. So we can just hear with faith. Faith is the entrance. People will protest. In science, we don't have faith. Of course they have faith. You have to have faith. Otherwise, why? First of all, you have to have faith that science works, at least at some level. You have to say, just like, for instance, the electric lights. We have faith that science works because we have things like electric lights. Okay, but it's still faith. And underlying that is the faith that life is better by science, which is highly questionable. Is the world better nowadays due to technological improvements? Highly questionable. But we have to have faith. We have to have faith in the ability to understand. We have to have faith in the teachers, what they're teaching us. And there's good reason not to have faith, actually. As we find at the, physics. You do physics, is it? Krishna Ram? Chemistry, not so bad. Physics, well, that's the most prestigious, right? Physics. But both at the macroscopic level and the microscopic level, they can't go any further. They can only indulge in speculation. They can't go anywhere. They've reached their limits. But they won't recognize that. They just keep on speculating. There's some things we're not going to understand. And how are we going to understand God? But we should understand that there is God. It's very foolish not to accept that there is God. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. It, as Srila Prabhupada worded it, it is the science of God. Science in the sense that we can test it. The test is there in our own lives because we're dealing with adhyatma vidya, knowledge of the self, that if we imbibe this knowledge, we become free from material entanglement. That doesn't mean that God's going to come and pay off your debts. But it does mean that we see the world in a manner in which we understand that everything here is temporary. And I don't have any intrinsic connection with anything in this world. My intrinsic connection is with Krishna. So it's a great science. We should try to understand it. It's not the usual topic of discussion by those who discuss the Bhagavatam in a popular way. I was just in Gujarat, and it's common in Gujarat you see hoardings inviting people to attend a Bhagavat Katha. You'll see in Vrindavan and Govardhan and in all over Gujarat. It's still a popular tradition. Here in Hyderabad must be also for the North Indian people. I don't think the Telugu people have this tradition. There must be a few Bhagavad Kathas here and there sometimes. But they won't discuss these things. They won't discuss Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukti Sangasya Jayate. Their discussion of Bhagavatam is some kind of cheating. They talk something about Krishna's pastimes, but they don't discuss how we have to become free from material entanglement. We have to become free from material desire. They won't discuss such things. And they won't discuss the transcendental position of Krishna and establish that. So it becomes like some storytelling. It's better than going to some lusty movie, definitely. Well, unless the Bhagavatam description is given in a lusty way. I don't know. I haven't attended them. But some piety will be there, at least material piety will be there, which is one reason why people go also. They think we'll get some material benefit, something good, to give umbrellas to the Bhagavad speaker, because it said the kind of gift you should give to the speaker of Bhagavatam. I was once in Chennai, this was many years ago, there was a Hindi Bhagavad Pravachan going on. They invited me to come and speak something just at the end of the 7 days. So at the end of the 7 days, they came and so many umbrellas were given to the speaker because there's a list of the things you can give. And one of them is an umbrella. So he got about 200 umbrellas and he must have taken them back and sold them wholesale. What's he going to do with 200 umbrellas? And then the next Bhagavad speaker gets the same umbrella. I once was sent to meet Chandrasekhar Arendran of the Kanchi Math. You may not have heard his name. The smartest in Tamil Nadu, they know his name very well. So there was a coconut shop set up outside the mat where he was staying, and so many people were bringing coconuts. I just wondering what happened to all those coconuts. Maybe they get recycled. So much cheating is going on. There's a Diksha ceremony today, and it is my solemn promise to not cheat you, those who take initiation. Yeah, I say Hari Bol, I can give a clap, because it's not expected, is it? Big clap for that. No, I'm not telling you to clap. What's going on? Now that just shows what a bad state the world is in. If someone says, Guru, I'm not going to cheat you, and it becomes subject to cheer and applaud. Some years ago I was in the West and in one temple, and they introduced the speaker, Prabhupada disciple, or maybe he said himself. I was married 50 years ago or something. I'm still married to the same woman. And there's big applause. In India, you're still laughing. Maybe after 10 years, you won't be laughing. Maybe they'll applaud you even if you get married. Live in like a dog and a cat. So, to not cheat means to simply present the same message that we have received from Srila Prabhupada, who received it in the parampara, and to live that message. That much I can do. And you also, please don't cheat me. You follow your vows. Initiation means what? You can chant Hare Krishna. You don't, what do you need initiation for that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked everyone to chant. But initiation means you take the Bhakti Lata Bija, which means faith. Faith in what? In Anyabhilashita Shunya Bhakti. That this is our purpose of life, is to render devotional service to Krishna without any other desire. This is our goal. That you should know. It's not a matter of passing a test that you should do. It's not a matter even of saying 16 rounds, four regulated principles. But the intention has to be there. That I am going to, now my life is meant for cultivating devotion to Krishna without it's Krishna Anushilana, cultivating the desire to serve Krishna and not deliberately cultivating other desires. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Distribute these books. You'll get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Live the books. Make your life Srimad Bhagavatam, as Srila Prabhupada said. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. No, I don't. Please don't clap. I didn't come here for claps. Thank you. Question? Okay, question.
Thank you, ma'am. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Thank you for so beautifully bringing out the difference between what is a chemical bundle and the importance of living spark. You know, you distinguished very beautifully. And Maharaj, when I was in Boston, Massachusetts, recently I came to know that they have made a robo soldier, you know, with all the joint movements in the body. And you can run in the battlefield. So the Americans were thinking that in future we can have soldiers who are robots.
Yeah, yeah, you'll have drones and robots fighting each other.
Yeah.
And when one side wins, they'll come and destroy all the people.
Yeah. That was their thing, but they were saying that.
And then the question will come, what do we need humans for?
They say that humans...
We don't need humans anymore.
You don't have to damage the human body. We can protect our people. But then they found that if the robot is hacked by somebody, then
they'll turn against you.
Yeah, exactly. Just like when money is in my pocket, it's my friend. When the same money is in someone else's pocket, it becomes my enemy. So why I was quoting this example, Maharaj, although...
I'll just interrupt you a bit because in the news... Maybe about 2 years ago, there's all this talk about how Russia's always hacking the CIA and influencing the elections. Well, that's your stupidity. It means they're better at their job than you are. You're trying to hack their system, but they hacked your system. So don't complain. You're just not as smart as them. That's all. Go on.
In the same manner, I heard that even Ravana's Pushpaka Viman was able to take right or left based on mental command of Ravana. So when I was in US, there was a Tesla car. One fellow was driving me. So he was telling it's an automated car. But the automated cars are also started by a living spark.
And it, yeah, of course.
And it works for a living person.
Yeah.
So even though a plane may be autopiloted, it is controlled from the control room. Like if I send a drone.
Well, it may be also that technology may come, that planes may react to different air pressures and different movements of the weather and this and that. Who knows what these demons will do?
But all of them are like borrowed intelligence, which is programmed by the machine.
It's called artificial intelligence.
Yes, ma'am.
And what is real intelligence?
Real intelligence knows the difference between living spark and matter.
That's the beginning. What was that I was seeing recently? There was some. Yeah, talking about artificial. Ah, yeah, it was a debate between a theist and atheist run by artificial intelligence. The artificial intelligence took the arguments from both sides. And in the comments section, someone pointed out that the irony of it all is that the artificial intelligence, all the programs are written by conscious, intelligent humans. So, what's the conscious intelligence entity behind the humans who wrote the program? It's not acting automatically. Hare Krishna. Shall I finish? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.